It's a pleasure to welcome back Trader Dan to the show. Dan Norsini, he runs a blog here. It's traderdan.net, and he's been a commodities trader for many a moon. He has quite a following online. Welcome back, Dan Norsini.
Hey, Chris, thanks for the invite. Nice to be back. It's been a while.
Yeah, it's been too long. And, you know, a lot of great stuff up on your blog, biotech sector, payrolls, the precious metals.
You know, when I look at the precious metals, Chris, I always look at them. Let me back up and say it this way. I never look at them in isolation. I always look at them in comparison to other markets, other asset classes, commodity sector as a whole, interest rate, currency markets, as well as the stock indices. And I try to get a sense of where money is moving. I guess money flows are a big thing for me as a trader. I like to kind of see, you know, where the money's going, where is it coming out of, where it's going into. And in that sense, you get a sense of what the sentiment is toward a market. And for me as a trader, trying to anticipate, you know, whether there's a bullish bias to a market or a bearish bias, you really got to gauge that sentiment. And the best way to gauge is just to follow the price action and see where the money's going.
That's your job, right, as a trader. I mean, you've got to try to find out the money flows and just where folks have interest. And, you know, you might look at the COT report, keep an eye on the commercials versus the specs, see what the hedge funds are doing. And there's been some commotion over the yellow metal there with the COT, that the commercials and the specs and hedge funds just aren't behaving the way they typically do. Are you watching this at all?
Not only for the precious metals, but pretty much every other commodity market out there, including the interest rate markets as well, and the currencies, I might add, too, although the CME currencies are a lot smaller than the Forex market. But yeah, that being said, one of the things you have to take into account this time of the year is, you know, you're starting at year end. You know, you're already into the month of December. Every year, we get the same sort of phenomenon where you start to see traders, hedge funds, large specs begin to start moving to the sidelines or start to do some book squaring or book some profits or whatever. And so you'll get some fluctuations in the typical relationships that you normally see among those various groups, mainly because there's a lot of positioning going on and there's a lot of book squaring. You know, if you think about it this way, if you're a fund manager, you've had some good trades for, let's call it, you know, 11 months out of the year, you're doing pretty well in a lot of your trades. You want to go ahead and take some of that money off before the year end. And you like to do it generally before the mad rush to the exits happens, you know, towards the last couple of weeks of December, and particularly before the market conditions thin out as you get into the Christmas holiday. And so you'll start to see some of that year end movement, and that can give you some distortions in the normal relationships that we typically follow. So yeah, you know, following a commitment of traders, sure, you'll see some of that. You might see some aberrations, but generally those will not last very long. And as a general rule, as you move into the new year, you get into January, you'll start seeing those old relations get reestablished again as, you know, managers start to put positions on to move new money into the market for that year, or basically just start getting squared away with what position they're going to take in what market for 2018, I should say. But let me make a comment, Chris, while I'm talking about this, though, too, as far as the commodity sector in general goes. And I noted this on the blog yesterday, too, because recently we've been seeing a bout of selling that's hit the commodity complex as a whole. And this includes, you know, when I say commodities as a whole, I'm talking about the metals, you know, the base metals, the precious metals, the grain sector, the softs, you know, the livestock market. A lot of times you'll see that particular market, I mean, the commodity sector, you'll start to see some general direction in that one way or the other. Either buying will come in and it's across the board buying, or you'll see some selling come in and it's across the board selling. It seems to be very indiscriminate at times. And yesterday we saw a lot of that. We saw, you know, oil was down hard yesterday. We saw natural gas down hard. You saw gasoline, heating oil. So that energy complex was hit. The grains were sold off, livestock was sold off, the softs were sold, and of course the precious metals didn't escape that carnage yesterday either. You're seeing a continuation of that again today, with the exception being crude oil, which has popped up somewhat here today. But again, there's a general trend of selling that's taking place across the commodity complex today. And, you know, I've mentioned this before in my writings and other discussions and interviews as well. For me, as I watch the silver market in particular, one of the ways I try to get a sense of what direction silver might be leaning is to follow the broader commodity indices as a whole. And by that, I mean the Goldman Sachs commodity index is one you could use. The Dow Jones UBS commodity index is another one. There's a Rogers out there. There's quite a few. It used to be the old CRB, the Reuters Jeffrey commodity index. And basically, these are just a basket or a collection various commodities that are weighted by group, however the, the index fund owner wants to set that up. What you get with those indices is you get a good reflection or a good barometer of sentiment toward commodities in general. For instance, I remember way back in when we had the dollar falling down near 73. I forget when that was. Was it 2012 or 11? I can't even remember. It's been that long ago. But we were watching those commodities just keep going. I mean, oil was running, natural gas was running, grains were going, and of course, silver was going, copper was going, gold was going. They all were tending to go in the same direction because you had a lot of those speculative flows coming into the commodity sector as a whole. Fund managers, they had clients who wanted exposure to the commodity sector, and there are funds like that that they specialize in the commodities. And so a lot of money, a lot of hot money, momentum-based money went into those funds, and they poured it into the markets. And so as the commodity complex as a whole rose higher in price, silver was pulled up along with it. Well, you saw the exact opposite of that yesterday, and you're seeing again today. Commodities are moving down in price. Again, the indices are moving lower. And, of course, you look at silver, and what's it doing? Well, it's down. So it's not unexpected to see it doing that today. Now, on occasions, you'll see gold. It'll buck that trend, mainly because of its safe haven status. You'll see gold higher like it was yesterday when silver was hit so hard. You know, gold was relatively stable above 1263. But today, the selling across the commodity complex and the boost in the dollar was just too much, and down it went. So, there are no set 100% guaranteed linkages, but there are linkages that are close enough that we can pretty much put some good stock in those as far as indicators.
You mentioned the dollar. There's been sort of a disconnect, I think I've noticed in recent weeks, while those equities just keep flying higher. And this, national affinity for U.S. shares is just almost unprecedented. Not since the late 1990s have we seen anything like it. How big of a component is this tight negative correlation between shares and the precious metals? And what are the implications on a forward basis?
I think it's a huge connection there too, Chris. It really is. And to me, this, I try to keep things simple for when I'm trading. I found that the simpler you keep it, the better. And I look at markets and I kind of watch, the way my screen is laid out, I can see everything at one glance. I can see all the commodities. I can see, what the stock indices are doing. I can see the interest rate markets. I see the currency markets. General connection, what we've been seeing is that when you have what I call a risk trade, risk on, for lack of a better word, you'll see those stock indices go soaring higher. You'll see bonds and interest rates, the actual futures will drop in price. Mainly interest rates are going higher. You remember interest rates go opposite direction of the bond price. So you'll see bonds falling. You'll see the yen in particular will start to fall. And then as the yen falls, you'll see the gold price drop as well. And that's because there's a risk on trade. You almost have to go back until we had, back in 2008, right before that credit crisis hit, we had this huge thing called a yen carry trade. For the readers who may not be aware of that, it basically, rates were so low in Japan. I mean, they were like 0.5% that it was basically free money if you went over and borrowed money from Japanese banks. So what we had was a lot of hedge funds and very large speculative interests would go over to Japan. They would borrow huge sums of money in yen terms. Then they would take that yen that they just got from the bank and they would convert that into the currency that they were going to buy shares in. For instance, they were going to buy U.S. shares. You can't buy U.S. shares unless you pay for them in U.S. dollars. So you have a foreign exchange where you sell your yen, you buy the dollar. So what was happening was the yen was getting weaker and weaker and weaker during the yen carry trade and the dollar was getting boosted. And of course, stock prices were going up. And so you can sort of watch what happens with the yen because there are still enough of that yen carry trade around, even today, what is this, 8 years later, 9 years later, that you can still see that trade in effect. And what I mean by that is when you have a risk on trade, generally speaking, the yen is going to be lower against the dollar, which it is today. Now, it doesn't have to be by a lot, but you'll see it drop and move down against the dollar. And as a general rule, again, talking very generals here, Chris, as the yen is weak, you'll see stock prices firm. You'll see bond prices fall. And of course, you generally tend to see gold prices fall as well. The exact opposite takes place when we call what I call the risk aversion or the risk off, or let's call it the safe haven trade. You'll see the yen move higher, you'll see bonds move higher, and you'll see gold move higher. And I mean, like I said, I just got it set up on my computer screen, and it's almost like clockwork. You can watch this happen. There's very few deviations from that pattern. And basically, what you're watching when that takes place is you're watching shifts in sentiment. among traders. You know, are they willing to take on risk or are they not willing to take on risk? For instance, when we had the initial scare over there in North Korea, when he did his missile launches a while back, sent a lot of shockwaves through the market. And what you saw was stock indices sold off. You had bond prices soar. You had the yen move higher. And, of course, you had gold move higher. And when the concern faded, all those trades went the other direction. Gold dropped, bonds dropped, the yen dropped, and stocks went back up again. So there's enough of that pattern. It repeats often enough that you can see it pretty frequently. And matter of fact, it's exactly what we're getting today here as we're doing this interview. Stocks are higher. What do we have? Bonds are down over a full point. The yen is down about 0.7%. And gold, of course, is getting hit pretty hard as well. So that trade is still in play right now.
Give us an idea on the big trends as you see them for 2018. You know, we've got a new year ahead. Will we see more of this lack of enthusiasm for the commodities, or will things turn around?
No, I wish I had that clear of a crystal ball, Chris. One thing that people follow me for years, no, I'm not very good at predictions. I'm a trader, so I don't try to predict too often, but I do look for general trends, and I do try to figure out fundamentally what's going on and then see if my view is confirmed by the sentiment in the market and by the price action. So that being said, a lot in my mind hinges on the outcome of what's going to take place in U.S. and the U.S. here with tax reform. That's a huge deal for me personally as a trader, watching that and seeing how the market reacts to that. And that in turn will impact the growth rate in the U.S. economy next year. So let's put it this way. If the Congress gets tax reform passed and Trump signs it into law, and it has some pretty good provisions in it from what I've been able to read of the package, of course, we're not going to know what the final package is until it comes out of conference. But based on what I'm seeing now, it's a pretty business-friendly tax package they're putting together. If that thing comes through in its present form, I can see it boosting U.S. growth prospects next year. I mean, our economy, our GDP rate has improved. We're still not where I think we should be. I think historically we should be up above 4%. You know, if we get there, I see continued bid into the stock market. I mean, you still seem to have this environment in which, interest rates are rising very slowly, but it's a very, very slow, gradual rate of increase. It's not spooking stock traders right now. And so as long as that pattern is there, if you don't see any surge in short-term interest rates, you don't see the Fed panic, you see a continuation of improving growth. For me as a trader, watching what's happened over the last year and judging by the way the prices have moved, I can see continued pressure on the metals, mainly because I would think the dollar would get boosted, and I think you'd see the yen under pressure as well because people will be willing to take on risk. The wild card in this is what form exactly does tax reform take, and more specifically, are we going to get this thing with any retroactive components to it or what? You know, what's the form it's going to take? And then we'll have to see how the market responds to that. But, I mean, if you think about this, Chris, one of the features in that tax reform package was a lowering of the penalty for overseas corporate earnings that, been parked offshore, so to speak. There are some estimates of, some of that money could be in excess of $2 trillion. That's an awful lot of money. If that tax reform package comes through and you start to see U.S. corporations opt to go ahead and bring some of those earnings home, that's a lot of money that needs to come into the U.S. That would be very, very dollar positive for the U.S. dollar. And again, I mean, just based on previous linkages, if you have a dollar that's very strong, it's hard for me to see gold having a very strong rally under that kind of environment or in those conditions. The flip side to this, then, is, however, if you do see the dollar get boosted like that and you start seeing some real pickup in growth, the thing I would watch for is to see if inflationary pressures pick up. And it's going to show up first in the wages, in the payrolls component. That's what we're watching so closely right now. If inflationary pressures begin to build, I think you'll see money coming into the commodity complex as a whole. Under that environment, I would be very friendly towards silver. Again, silver, in my view, has to have an inflationary environment in which to thrive. It doesn't do well in a sort of a slow growth, no inflation environment. We certainly know it didn't do very well in a deflationary environment. We all saw what happened to it back in 2008. But if you do get some inflationary pressures and you do start to see commodity prices in general rise, particularly in my standpoint, oil prices above $60 a barrel, West Texas Intermediate. If we get oil above 60, you'll see a general bid in commodities. As a whole, I think that'll put a floor under the silver price at that point.
All right, Dan Norsini, why don't you tell folks more about the TraderDan.net website, what they can find, your blog, and any other topicality contact information?
Well, thanks, Chris. Yeah, we cover a lot of markets over there, Chris. You know, earlier, many years ago, I used to focus on gold and silver, but, you know, we branched out because I've been trading a lot of different markets for many, many years. So, you know, we follow the energy markets pretty closely now, oil markets, natural gas markets. We're also following a lot more of the ETFs because they're trying to take advantage of some of where these money flows are shifting into what various sectors. So we're watching defense sectors and biotech and tech sectors in general, a lot of other things. We're watching lithium, and of course, everybody's watching Bitcoin right now, which is, I don't know, that's a whole other story we could talk about some other day, Chris. That thing is absolutely amazing what's going on in there. But we do talk about it. I don't know if a whole lot of us are trading it, but we certainly do talk about it.
Trader Dan, just a lot of fun. Hopefully we can get on to some of these other topics in future discussion.
Oh, anytime, Chris. It's a pleasure talking to you again. Thanks for having me on the program.